Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to Cinnamon Babe, but I'm here today on Boondoggle.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our today's Boondoggle radio show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under Today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at Today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/today's boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at today'sboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well, so please support them. And receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
The pinnacle of rock festivals in the United States, Sonic Temple Art and Music Festival, returns to historic Crew Stadium with the biggest lineup ever to rock Columbus. Slipknot, Disturbed, Pantera, Limp Bizkit, Evanescence, Judas Priest, Stain, Rise Against, and the original Misfits, plus A Day to Remember, Falling in Reverse, Breaking Benjamin, 311, Sleep Till Seether, In This Moment, Fame, Cypress Hill, Sum 41, Kerry King, Anthrax. And that's just the beginning. Over 120 fans, 4 days, and for the first time ever, a fourth stage to give you more metal, more rock, and more mayhem. May 16th through the 19th at historic Crew Stadium in Columbus, Ohio. Tickets on sale today at SonicTempleFestival.com.
Some people will go to any lengths to pop, my man. I mean pop. Like, just this past year, I resorted to deadlifting my girl's Tesla so my chassis could outshine the competition. But what's more important is nutrition. And that just blows my mind. That's why I let TNT Health put together my workout and meal plan. And everyone's seeing results now. And that's why it makes my heart soar like a hawk to share with all of Today's Boondoggle fans that if you use promo code Boondoggle, you can receive 10% off your purchase at TNTHealth.com. So remember what the Macho Man says. Go to TNTHealth.com. Get some product, use promo code Boondoggle, and save, especially if you want pythons the size that look like they come off of Skull Island.
Yeah, now hang it up now. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
All right, listen up. Hold on to your seats. Grab your girls. Grab your beers.
What's going on? It's Tommy Beck, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Kato Kalin listens to this all the time.
Welcome to Today's Boondoggle. So one heap, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle. And a real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube or Rumble or BitChute or Odyssey, please hit that follow and subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever podcast platform you utilize, please hit that follow and subscribe button. So we continue to bring you conversations like the one I'm about to bring you right now. We're talking with the thrash metal vixens of the band Mean Streak. How are you doing, ladies?
Hi. How are you?
Good, good. So I was like, you know, pretty stoked about doing this interview because there's just so much of a musical collaboration through generations that I wanted to touch on, because I'm actually become a big fan of your son, Marlene, and his drumming with the band Tala. I got to check them out at a couple of music festivals this past summer and was up there side stage watching him do his thing, and incredible. Yeah. So what a musical family we got going on. But before I get into all that, I'm jumping the gun a little bit. I like to get a quick background. So we got Marlene and Martens.
Yep.
Right. And wanted to ask, like, originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Me?
Yeah, well, we'll start with you, Marlene, and then we'll go with Martens.
Okay. Actually, I wanted to be a guitar player. That's exactly what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a musician. Always, from as little as I could be.
Nice. And how about you, Martens?
Basically the same, you know. Originally wanted to play guitar, then found bass and wanted to play bass, and that was it.
And what was it that you know, drew you in and attracted you to music and playing?
I don't know what attracted me to music. I just always was, like, from as young as I could be, I was just always attracted to it. I had my parents buy me a little toy drum set. I was always into building. My parents laughed at me because I went into my basement and I built a guitar when I was a little kid out of a 2x4 and a piece of wood and rubber bands that weighed like 1,000,000 pounds. And I would lug it up the stairs. So my parents actually bought me one because it weighed like 3,000,000 pounds. I don't know what attracted me to it. I just was automatically drawn to it. It just was in my blood. I don't know. I can't explain why, but it was just there and very strong. Like, I had to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Martens?
I was basically the same. I wanted a guitar. I was probably like 7. My parents got me an acoustic guitar, but wouldn't let me take lessons. So like, oh, you don't need lessons. Well, I didn't know how to play it, so I made them give it away. And then I guess years later, I had played instruments in school. I had played viola, and I was listening to, it was a Led Zeppelin song. Still don't remember what song it was, but a Led Zeppelin song came on in a friend's brother's car. And I was like, what is that? What is that? What is that? And he was like, oh, that's the bass. And that was it. That was just,
what
that was
the
it.
Thing I with keep... parents that wouldn't give lessons?
I don't know.
My parents, like, when I was little, wouldn't give me lessons till I was in high school.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you'll never practice.
Yeah. It took till high school. I'm like, why is that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my youngest daughter wanted to get into guitar when she was young, said she wanted to. And I had to, like, I had already gone through, I don't know how many things that phases that she had wanted, you know, at the time. So it's like, you buy the thing and then it's like, okay, you know, how serious are you? And let's just say the guitar, you know, ran through its phase. And then all of a sudden she wanted a keyboard. It's sitting over here in the corner, you know? So I guess it's, I guess maybe they were doing the waiting game to see how serious you were before they started investing more into
yeah,
it.
Maybe.
I guess. Maybe that was it. I don't know.
I think they were just more old school.
Yeah. When my son said he wanted to take drum lessons, I was like, okay. He was in kindergarten. Like, okay. And they weren't from my husband. Nope. They were not.
No?
No.
But now, Martens, you'd said that, you know, you heard a Led Zeppelin song that kind of like grabbed you and stuff. But Marlene, do you remember any, you know, what was it about guitar that, and was there any other influences or somebody that you heard that kind of?
No, I just was always into music. I know this is going to be corny, but the Jackson 5.
Oh, yeah.
I was obsessed with them. I'm going way back. I mean, to like little.
I mean, we were, you know, I mean,
yeah, like
as a kid, I mean, I listened to Paul McCartney and Wings. I mean, I must have been in elementary school and I listened to Aerosmith because somebody bought me an Aerosmith record. And, you know, as I got a little older, found, you know, Def Leppard had come out and they were cool because they were young and, you know.
Yeah, I was just from as long as I can remember, I always had my little 45s, my little record player. You could carry a record player around with you with the little, my 45s. And as I got older and the first band I really started liking that was like, was Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
And it went to Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Black Sabbath. You know, all those bands. Yeah. And that was the first thing I had to learn on guitar too, was Led Zeppelin. I mean, who didn't learn Stairway to Heaven on guitar? It's the first thing everybody in the world learns on guitar is Stairway to Heaven.
But or Smoke on the Water, you know.
Actually, no, my first was Stairway to Heaven and Pink Floyd. It was Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. I avoided Smoke on the Water. I was the rebel. I had to learn Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. Those were the two first songs when I finally was able to get lessons out of my parents. Wish You Were Here. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I remember like for me, like, I mean, I was the same way. I never was really dedicated to playing an instrument, but I've been a fan of music. And, you know, during my time growing up, my sister, you know, would get the albums for Christmas. And she was like big, like into like Rod Stewart and Leif Garrett and stuff that. And I remember like one year somebody thought it'd be a good idea to get her Kiss Alive. And she was just like, she wasn't about it though. She wasn't, she was just like, what is this? Ew. And I'm sitting across the room and that was my gateway. Then I was off, you know, I saw that. And then I was like, I started listening and that was the music genre that pulled me in.
That was my first concert, was Kiss in Madison Square Garden in 77, maybe?
Nice.
1970-something. Mike knows the exact concert I was at. It was 70-something. They came to Madison Square Garden, and I was only in middle school. I think I was in like seventh. God, I'm showing my age. Woof. It's not a good thing to do. But I was in middle school. I was in like seventh or eighth grade. I think, seventh grade, maybe. And I was so blown away. It was the greatest, most amazing concert I ever went to in my life. I was like, this is unbelievable. I have to do this.
And then you never saw anything like that again for years.
Like, this is it. I have to do this.
That's too funny.
It's like, oh my
God. Yeah, and at Madison Square Garden of all places too, did you get a chance to go see the air quotes final show at Madison Square Garden with them?
It wasn't the, what was the big one? I think I might've been at that one.
No, the final.
The one that just happened.
I've been to so many final Kiss shows. There were so many.
Exactly.
Me and Mike went to one and it was such a big event. And everyone was like, it was the same as the one. And I was like, I was at that show that was here. And it was the same one that I was at. Like, and then it was supposed to be like the end of it. And then there was a million years more that they still kept playing.
Well, COVID happened and then they extended it.
I don't know. Yeah. And then this last one, I was like, Mike, how many more of the last shows can we go to? Like, how many more? No, I wasn't at that one, but I've been at a million of them.
Plus, you have a great picture with Gene Simmons.
Yes, he's pulling my ear off.
I got a nice family photo with Gene Simmons, and he's got a, you know, my youngest daughter around the throat. So I don't know if, you know, but
he's really funny. He's a great guy.
Now, you both grew up in the same area then?
No.
Where are you from, Martin?
I'm from Long Island.
Long Island?
Yep.
Okay. And then what was when you guys started playing out and like wanting to go check out kind of like local bands and stuff, what was the music scene like in your areas?
Oh, wow. I mean,
it was a little bit back when we were playing, there was a big cover band scene going on. So all the different clubs used to play, lots of bands were playing. Like back then, Twisted Sister was huge in the club scene. And who else was playing? White Lion, all those. They had a lot of cover bands playing. But they also had a huge, like, there was a big thrash scene going on. Anthrax, Overkill.
Yeah, they were all local.
They were all playing local in the whole New York scene with L'Amour's and the Ritz and the Limelight, the Cat Club and CBGB's. And
you had bands like TT Quick back then. You had Rough Cut who did all the Motley Crue stuff.
Mm-hmm. We had everybody coming through. It was a great, great time for clubs and music. Oh, it was fun.
Yeah.
It
I mean, there were shows fun. Every night. I mean, every night we were out driving like an hour going somewhere to see somebody.
You could not have a great time back in the 80s. You just went out and you got to see everybody. Metallica was playing at L'Amour's. I mean, Iron Maiden. It was just an incredible time for metal music, and the club scene just was incredible back then.
Right. And when did you two first like meet up and become friends?
That would be her audition.
Well, I went to L'Amour with the guy I was dating at the time and was in the process of leaving a band I was in. And he had picked up the Aquarian Weekly and said, "Yeah, well, let's take this home and take a look." And sure enough, I took it home and there was an ad that Raina had placed.
Right.
And, you know, listing, I don't know what, I'm not even sure what bands she had listed on it anymore, different things. And I was like, "Oh, sounds good." And I didn't know the area code. And I called her up and she's like, "Well, we're like Rockland County. Where are you?" I'm like, "Long Island." She's like, "Oh, you're kind of far." I'm like, "Well, how long does that take? You know, pull out my road map." Cause of course we didn't have Google back then.
Right.
Like, "Yeah, it should take me an hour." I got lost in Harlem, wound up getting there and I made it. It took me quite a while to get there cause I had never driven that far by myself and showed up with my little amp and my bass and was like, "Hi, I'm here. I'm coming. You have practiced? Yeah, today. Okay, I'll be there."
Yep. That was the day we met and have been friends ever since that day. And actually the ones that me and Raina are the girls, the other guitar player in the band, we're the ones that lived in the same neighborhood.
Okay.
It was me and myself and Raina lived in Rockland County together and we formed the band together and we put the ads in and found all the other girls in the band together. We found Lisa, we found Tina who lived in the same area as us. And then we stole Yael from another band.
Yes. Well, she wasn't in the band anymore at that point, but
yeah, we stole it anyway.
We procured her phone number when we went in a club one night, just in case.
So you and Raina originally started Mean Streak. What, what motivated you two putting Mean Streak together? And I'm always curious about why people pick certain band names and stuff like that. Why?
Well, we actually, we met through a mutual friend and we both happened to play guitar at the time. We were both guitar players and we both were totally into the same kind of music and all this stuff. And we met and we hit it off right away. We just became great friends like instantly. And we just hit it off and we were both like, "Hey, we should make a band." And then we were like, "We should make an all-girl band. Nobody else around here. There are no all-girl bands that are, you know, doing this kind of stuff. Let's like make a band." We were like, "Okay, cool." And then the name game started and we thought of like a million names, like really a million names. Some of the names we rolled around was Headhunter, Bush. Bush was a good one. And then somebody took the name Bush like years later. I don't even remember how we settled on Mean Streak.
I think it was her mom. I think it was Raina. I think it was Raina's mom had mentioned something and something about a Mean Streak or something like that. Plus, you guys liked Y&T and the song had been out.
Yeah,
right,
the song
point.
Was out.
But
we just settled on
it. Pretty sure
remember.
It was Raina's mom. Something.
Yeah. We should have took the name Bush. I like that name.
Having Rosdale would not be happy.
Yeah, maybe he'd be running around as Mean Streak right
now. Yeah, I always liked that name, though. That would have been a cool name for a girl band, Bush. Come on. Does it get better than that?
Especially back in the 70s, you know?
Yeah, that would have been a great name for a girl band.
But, and then as, you know, as the band started coming together and then you started playing out, getting out in the clubs, like being the first all-female thrash metal band of that time frame, did you find it like difficult trying to make your mark out there, or was the thrash metal scene like welcoming and helping, you know, pull you in?
Well, it was not, it wasn't as hard as it would seem, but it was hard to get accepted right away. But I think that because a lot of the guys were like, oh yeah, yeah, right, you guys are really going to play this stuff, like, come on, let's see what you can do. Okay, sure, show us what you can do. But I think we were able to hold our own and we were able to actually play our instruments. So I think because of that, we were accepted and got along well with the other bands, and we were able to play with the other bands, and they actually welcomed us in able to open up for them.
Yeah, we were pretty much friends with everybody.
With everybody.
You know,
yeah.
We were really lucky with that. I think also being a new band in the beginning, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're male, female, or what you play. If you're new to the scene, that's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. But once you start playing shows and people start knowing you, that's the whole difference.
And I think it really did make a difference, the fact that we actually were able to play our instruments. We weren't just a bunch of girls getting on stage, making noise and sounding horrible. We knew what we were doing. We were up there playing, and we were up there playing music. We weren't up there showing off and, you know, doing anything. We were just up there to play the music and have fun.
Yeah, I mean,
just like them. And we wound up becoming friends with all of them, and especially Overkill. Mm-hmm. We were with them all the time. We played so many shows with them. We played with Anthrax all the time. We played with everybody all the time and got along great with them. Yeah, we even stole some of their crew.
I think also the fact that, you know, back a lot of the people were doing, you know, it was all cover stuff, a lot of the bands, and we were doing covers, and that's what people wanted to listen. And, you know, to them, it was more interesting. Oh, you know, there's a girl band, they're playing Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, let's go. So,
yeah, and we wound up being friends with everybody. Yep. We played with all the bands and got along great with all of them.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, as you were saying, it's like, I guess it didn't matter. Like, just as long as you showed that you were serious, once again, kind of going back to probably like, you know, the parents holding off on lessons and stuff, how dedicated, how serious were you? And it's like a trial by fire initiation with the bands that are already established in the scene. Like, you know, before they brought you in, and you showed them that you were serious. You learned how to, you played your instruments well and earned the respect, and they brought you into the circle. Now, did they take you out like on big tours outside the area, or was most of your shows like, you know, local support?
They weren't always local. I mean, we did go far. We never did like national tours with any of them, but we did go
Boston,
Baltimore, yeah, Connecticut,
Pennsylvania. I mean, Pennsylvania was kind of far for us back in the day.
That was pretty far. We actually came to this area, which we thought was the boondocks when we got here.
Right?
We're like, where the heck are we?
Things have changed since then, but yeah. So basically the tri-state area, like, you know, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, and then, like I said, Baltimore here and there.
Yeah.
We did shows with Overkill in Boston. We did shows out here with Overkill also.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, this is where we came to that Airport Music Lounge or something like that. Yeah. So we came to this area.
And then would you say, like, I mean, obviously, you had a lot of support there locally, but did a lot of those guys, like, help kind of, like, pitch and get your name out to some of the labels and, you know, get back then there wasn't no internet and stuff. So was they like, you know, delivering any like hard copies of some of your music for people to check out and like on the West Coast and stuff?
We did have some people doing that. We had a label here in New York and we had a label over in Europe, but for some reason they just wouldn't give us the tour support to go over to Europe. We did, and the label here in America did not give us tour support to We did get an offer to go out to California to do West Coast stuff, but we never got the tour support, and we couldn't afford it. I mean, yeah. It was the '80s. We had no money to get out to California. They were like, sorry, we're not giving you any money. And we were like, oh, well, how the hell are we going to get there?
I think one of the biggest promo things back in the day wasn't necessarily other bands or musicians. It was more local people and magazines, things like Metal Hammer and all the different,
magazines.
All big magazines back in the day. We were in a lot of the magazines. There were some nice spreads and stuff. That was pretty big.
They just never gave us like the tour support to ever be able to do anything. They just wouldn't, I don't know, just wouldn't give us any money to do anything. And we didn't have any money of our own. We were all young girls. We didn't have any money. And we don't know why. They just didn't. So we just played around here.
Yeah, I think it was a hard thing. You know, it was also at that point, like you had said earlier, it was kind of, as grunge was starting to come in, once we were starting to really get popular, the music scene kind of changed and people
just
had no idea what to do. We weren't the Bangles and like,
they didn't know what to do with
us. Grunge kind of put a, you know, it thankfully it didn't kill, but it, you know, definitely slowed down the thrash and heavy metal scene for a while. Cause that was the new big flavor for a while.
That changed the club scene dramatically.
Yes, it did dramatically.
So. And then I see, you know, a good portion of Mean Streak is the better halves of the band Dream Theater. How did those relationships come to be, and how did you connect with those guys originally?
Very funny story. So they were, the Dream Theater guys are all from Long Island, and Lisa is, Martens is from Long Island, I'm sorry. And our drummer Yael was also from Long Island, and she knew
Mike because they went to
school Mike, together. They went to the Five Towns College, I guess, together. So she knew them, Dream Theater, who was called Majesty at the time, actually. Mm-hmm. And we were from Rockland County, New York. And she kind of kept telling us, you got to hear these guys from Long Island. Their playing is amazing. And we were like,
And me and Yael at that point knew them because we were on Long Island a lot.
They were always in Long Island. They lived there. And we were like, okay. Who are these guys? Eventually, we all went down. Long story short, we all went down to Concrete Foundations Forum in California together. And Yael introduced us to her friends in this band, which now was called Dream Theater. And all of a sudden, they thought we were a little bit snobby and ignoring them. They used to come to our Mean Streak shows, actually. Yeah. Mike and John would come to the Mean Streak shows.
John Mayung, too.
They
came to a couple of shows. One time, they didn't even know we were playing. They were there to check out a singer.
Yeah, and we didn't know from them. We were already playing. We didn't know from these guys. Who are these guys playing? They came to our shows. We tried to sell them T-shirts. And then in California, we met them. And then we were told that they thought we were a little bit snotty and stuff. So we were like, ooh, we better be nice to these guys. And we wound up hanging out with them and drinking with them at the Rainbow. And the next thing you know, we were like, ooh, they're kind of cute. These guys are kind of cute. And Raina was the first one. And her and John started, you know, they started hanging out and flirting, and in California, we wound up all coming back to New York. Me and Mike started flirting with each other. Raina and John started dating. And then Mike and I started flirting with each other. And then about 3 months later, Mike and I started dating. And then all of a sudden, how many months after that?
Oh,
it was a year later?
It was a little bit after that.
We still were hanging out all in the same circles. Yeah, you know, we were all friends with each other. And Lisa started dating John Young. Yeah. She showed up at Mike's house.
No, that was his. That was him.
Well, John and Lisa showed up one day. Me and Mike answered the door, and you guys were holding hands.
Oh, but I was there.
I was looking out the window.
I didn't know that. I just remembered him being there and being like, why are you doing this?
They were holding hands. We were like, this is new, and then that's it. It was three of them and three of us, but we were all in the same circle group of friends anyway. Like, it was the same group of friends. Like, we were all the same group of friends hanging out at the same parties, hanging out at the same clubs, going to see the same bands, going to do everything. And they were coming to see us. So, and apparently we also saw Majesty play at L'Amour's one night, which I still don't really, I only vaguely remember. And I think it was Charlie Dominici was singing in the band that night too. Yeah. So that's basically how we met. Down in Concrete Foundations Forum. Yeah.
And it was all because of Yael.
And it was all because of our drummer Yael. And it was all because they said that me and Raina were ignoring them, or we were snotty or something like that. We were like, I think we should be nice to these guys now. And we were nice. I guess we were really nice. We were so nice that we married them.
Yeah. And then, I mean, they say that the best relationships start off as friends. Obviously, a lot in common with the music and stuff like that. But, you know, forming that friendship. And then what would you say, like, if you were going to give away any kind of like metal, rock, romance tips, what would it be?
Metal, rock, romance.
I don't know. Well, be yourself. Always be yourself. Don't try to be somebody else. Just be yourself. That's a biggie.
Touring makes the heart grow fonder. Those little breaks away from each other when your husband has to go on tour.
Yes, it's a good thing because
it is really a good thing.
They're home all the time. It's not like they go to work from 9 to 5.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I'm not saying that snotty or sarcastically, but everybody else's husband gets up in the day. They go to work. They come home at dinner time. So they get that little break. My husband does not. Her husband doesn't. When they're home, they are home 24 hours a day, every single day of the week. So when they get to go on tour, there's that little break of space that everybody on the planet needs.
Yeah.
And it makes you want to see them and want to be with them and miss them. And then when he comes home, it's like wonderful. I think it's good
for them too.
They need to get out and do stuff. I mean, think of them just sitting home every day. Like, what am I going to do with myself?
They're going 24 hours a day. You know, they're always working and doing stuff, but still.
He sits on his computer all day. He sits. That's one thing, but
like you said, I mean, that is beautiful, you know, because then it relights that fire, and then, you know, the time away, and it's just like almost like you know, that kind of like that first date all over again when they come back.
It really is. Like, he's at NAMM right now. I can't wait for him to come home. Before I left, I couldn't wait for him to leave. So. I'm only kidding.
And, you know, so you and Mike end up getting married. You've been together a long time. You've got two kids together, I believe I read.
Yes.
And now is a son and a daughter.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is your daughter involved with music too?
She's involved in music, but she's also involved in a totally different. She is full on into theater music, singing and performing live on stage. She's also into acting, but she loves a totally different style of music. Like, I'm all into the heavy stuff. My son, Max, is into heavy, heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Ellie's into theater, theater music. All the way,
but she likes
sounds like my oldest daughter too, you know. My oldest daughter got in a show choir in high school, and now she's in college doing, you know, loves singing and performing, and, you know, they're in a whole different, you know, genre of music as well, you know, like Machine Gun Kelly or, you know, Justin Bieber and whatever.
Oh yeah, that's my daughter. Totally
But I'm probably there with I'm bouncing between like you and Mike and Max, you know, on my musical scales.
It's funny. She loves all the theater stuff, but yet she'll come to Max's concerts, whether it be Code Orange or Tala or Slipknot even. She'll come to Slipknot concerts, and she likes that too.
Yeah.
So it's a little, but I think she just likes that because she's so used to hearing it around the house. That, but she loves going to Tala. She knows all the Tala songs. Mm-hmm. She knows the Code Orange songs. She loves all the Dream Theater songs or any of the bands Mike is in, Winery Dogs, all those Metal Allegiance, all that stuff. But her love is, you know, theater and that kind of music. And the Justin Biebers and Taylor Swift and all that stuff.
So, yeah. So, well, that's cool. So theater's still involved, you know, with Mike in Dream Theater and then your daughter in theater. Your dreams. But yeah, and then, you know, like I said, going back to with Max, seeing him performing, like and you said you were very encouraging, you know, early on for him when he wanted to start playing. But what incredibly talented, I can't say enough good things, and I really enjoy that band. Their singer, everything. It's just like it's crazy.
Oh,
it's
Justin, I love that man so much. Yeah, he's so great. He's so great. His personality is just, I just love him. He's great. I love that kid. He's awesome.
Yeah, like after they had finished one of their sets, and I was standing there, and I talked to Max for a little bit, and just was like telling him, wow, how. And Justin as well is just like, wow, just blown away by their live show. And they're very appreciative and respectful. And, you know, they're just proud, just to get, let mom know, you know, proud moment, you know, there, you know, but
I always laugh at him. I'm like, you just look so on stage, you know, then like he's done and he comes over and he's like, hi, mom. I'm like, oh, you're so sweet. And he gets on stage and his head's spinning like crazy and he's gives me his little hug.
Yeah, it was exactly same thing. Like after he got off, he was just like, you know, I was just like, wow, that was incredible, man. He was just, oh, thanks a lot. Just like for I think whatever, you know, the Linda Blair head spinning stuff and everything, you know. Was like, I didn't know if I wanted to say anything afterwards, but then, like you said, nice and very approachable. But back to Mean Streak. I had to throw this out there too. I had this written down on my notes because I thought it was a good nickname, since with all your other halves, that you were known as the Real Housewives of Heavy Metal. Is there ever going to be like a show maybe, or possibility of making that?
That would be awesome. If anybody out there wants to pick us up as the Real Housewives of Heavy Metal, we're all in. We're all in.
We need to bring stuff like that, at least music related shows, back to like MTV. If MTV is still even a thing. I don't even know anymore.
Does MTV do anything with music anymore?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. On occasion, certain hours of the day.
Because I always thought it was music television, but somehow it became
reality TV.
Reality TV. It should just be RTV. Reality TV.
Well, they've got several channels.
True.
Now it's like Young Moms TV or something like that. What is it? 13 and Pregnant's like their hits or whatever. Yeah, so they lost me with all that stuff.
They're playing metal videos at I think it's Fridays at 9 or 10 now. They've been playing it again, kind of like Headbangers Ball stuff on I don't remember if it's the classic or it's one of the channels.
Oh, nice. I'll have to be on the lookout for that then, because I definitely miss Headbangers Ball, you know.
Yeah, they played a lot of the stuff from Headbangers Ball back in the day, and then there was one or two things. The one night we caught it a couple of months ago, I think they played 3 different Iron Maiden videos that I don't remember ever seeing.
Really?
They were that old.
Yeah, that would have been cool to see. So I would have liked to see that.
Nice. And then so back to Mean Streak then. When did you guys decide, okay, well, you know, we gave it a good run back then. We're going to take a hiatus. But back then, were you thinking is a hiatus, or is it just like we were done?
We were done. And that was 1994. Basically, when grunge came in and like took over, and it was getting really hard to book gigs, and we were just getting really tired, and we were just trying to keep up with the change in the music scene and the club scene. And it was no longer, at least this is the way I felt. I'm really speaking for myself right now. I don't know what the rest of the girls were feeling, but I was feeling like the music was no longer coming from, it was coming from a place of more, let's try to write stuff to fit in with the scene, as opposed to writing stuff that was really coming from the heart and what I wanted to write. And it just didn't feel, I don't know, it just didn't feel right anymore. And after a while, I remember it was right at my wedding. I got married in 1994. And me and Raina just looked at each other. We were like, we're done. Let's just, like, after the wedding, we're just done. Like, got married in July in 1994. And we were like, after the wedding, we're not going to continue anymore. That was it. No hiatus, no nothing. We were just done. And that was the end. And it was that quick.
And how would you compare Martin to what she just said? How do you feel about the same way? Or
basically the same. You know, the whole scene had changed. The club scene had changed. Music had changed. Life had changed. You know, I got married the next year. Yeah. You know, we're all married. And within that next year, Raina and John had kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and that does change things, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, that's a full-time job. So it's just one of those things. You know, everybody went through it. I mean, Metallica all cut their hair. Dream Theater all cut their hair. You know, everything, you know, was a whole different change.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mike cut his hair too. Yeah. Whoa. Did not like that.
Okay. You can clear that with the boss first, huh?
Yeah, he's not allowed to ever do that again. Ever. Ever.
Now, during this time, though, obviously, I mean, music's still a part of you. And you know, you're in a musical relationship, musical household. Were you still like jamming though, you know, keeping?
I do have to say I did for a little while.
Yeah.
I did for a little while after, you know, while I even had my kids and I was still playing actually for a little while. I actually even auditioned for Vixen and I couldn't sing backup. So I didn't get the gig. They do a lot of singing in Vixen.
Yeah.
And I don't do a lot of singing anyway, but I auditioned for Vixen, which was just like a quick, it just flew by that quick. It was like a 2-second thing. But then after that, that was the straw that I just said, I'm done. I was playing for a little while and a couple of other thrash bands, nothing that ever I really liked. And then there was that little thing that came about, the Vixen audition. They really made me think that I had the gig. And then the manager called and said, no, we need somebody that could sing really perfect harmonies and stuff. So that's the excuse they gave me. And then after that, I just got like shot down and just said, out of the hell with it. And put the guitar in the case and became full-time mom. And that was it. I had two kids at that point anyway. So
yeah.
It would have been, I don't know what I was thinking anyway, because what would I have done with my kids? They were going on tour. I don't know where I would have, what I would have done with them. Mike would be out touring.
Yeah.
What would I have done with my kids? Where would I put them?
Yeah.
What if they would have said yes? What would I have done with them?
Your mom would have hated you.
Toss them out the window somewhere. All right, guys, bye.
CPS doesn't think put them in road cases.
Well, I would have enjoyed that. Road cases would be cool.
My kids are used to being on tour anyway. Yeah. My kids basically grew up on a tour bus. So I don't know what I was thinking, though. But luckily, they didn't take me because I had two kids and pets and everything else. So,
Life gets in the way. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, it's just crazy. I mean, both of us hadn't, before the Mean Street reunion, neither one of us had really played in almost 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't physically. I mean, by the time me and John, after we got married, I was just busy with stuff. And then we had kids and I just stopped playing. So.
Yeah, it was after that. I literally did not touch a guitar at all. I just got very disgusted and just... And then too busy, too busy.
So when the Mean Streak reunion comes along, I mean, obviously, like you said, you guys were pretty much done back then. But then why was now the right time, would you say, for the reunion? And then was it like you say, riding a bike when you got back on?
So basically, Raina, we all got together during COVID. We were just doing those Skype calls everybody was doing during COVID. And we just were all chit-chatting and talking. And we were like, oh, we should do a reunion. And then we did. And, you know, playing an instrument is sort of, we just were saying this, it's sort of like riding a bike. Certain parts of it are like riding a bike. You start to remember things and that you did, and you can all of a sudden after like 10 minutes, yeah, you can play the stuff. All of a sudden you're like, wow, yeah, I could still play this. But then there's the muscle part of it. Like I was saying to Lisa, that does need time to work, like the muscles in your hands and the muscles in your forearms and in your fingers. You need to work those and build those back up again. Like, you know, as you're playing, they start to get tired and they start to cramp up, and you can't do what you did, you know, 28 to 30 years ago. You need to actually work those muscles again and build them up. They take a while. You can't all of a sudden.
Carpal tunnel's legit.
Yeah, it's very legit. But you can't just all of a sudden pick up a guitar and down pick for, you know, a 6 minute song when you haven't done it for 30 years. Your arm just
especially the way you were shredding, you know?
It's like it just does. Your arm just goes, no, I'm not going to do that. You need to work that muscle for the next, you know, 2 months and build it back up to get that strength in your arm again, in your hand and your fingers. But you remember how to do it.
Yeah.
You just have to build up your stamina again, and you have to get that built back up. But all the rest of it is like riding a bike. You're just like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, things start to come back and you're like, oh, yeah, but you got to just build up the other stuff. And that takes a little time.
Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't come back overnight. It's like somebody going to the gym. If you went to the gym your whole life and then you stopped for 20 years, you can't just walk back in the gym and lift all those weights you used to lift 20 years ago. It's going to take you to, you're going to remember how to do it.
But you got
to
build
and
up.
And yeah, you're going to do it, but you ain't going to lift the same amount of weight you used to lift. You got to build back up slowly and you got to work those muscles again until you can get to where you used to be. It's the same exact thing. Your arms and your fingers and your hands have to work back to get that speed and get that stamina back to where it used to be 20 years, 30 years ago.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, it's like that.
So when you guys were talking during COVID, during the Skype and the idea was pitched, you had that in mind as well. Like, okay, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to need to plan it far enough ahead to, you know, do it right, to build up and do it right then.
Yeah. And we started playing like instantly and just started working. Me and Lisa had most work to do because two of the other girls had already been playing like in other bands. So they had their stamina and their playing up where it needed to be. They just had to relearn some of the songs from back in the 80s, where the two of us had to actually build back up to get to where we were and learn all, remember all those songs and get our memories going and remember everything. And we did do it. We just had to work. We had to work.
It took a while,
we had to
work.
Yeah. And we did. We worked it. We worked hard.
And then, so
it was fun. It was really fun getting, you know, back to where we were.
And then when the reunion, the official reunion happened, what was that feeling like? And how do you feel it?
How'd you
feel afterwards?
The tour was not something that we knew we were going to get when we decided to do the reunion. When we decided to do the reunion, we were thinking, okay, we're going to book like local tour, local club dates in the area, and we're going to do a reunion. We're going to play around. We did not have the John Petrucci tour. That was John, you know, inviting us out on tour with him. We had no idea we were going to get that. And we were like, oh, we even had a date in Brooklyn booked on our own, which unfortunately our singer fell that night right before showtime and broke her arm.
Yeah, she broke her wrist in two places.
So we wound up having no singer that night.
We played our first show in 30 years without a singer.
Yeah.
But we did it.
She was in the hospital. Yeah.
It was also like, you know, 98 degrees with no air conditioning and whatever.
She fell. But we did not have that tour. The reunion was not planned with that tour. It was just something we decided to do. We're going to do a Mean Street reunion. And then like months and months later, John was doing this tour and he asked Mike to do the album and play the tour. And then all of a sudden he approached us with this idea to be the support band. And we were like, wow.
Yeah. I actually found out backstage at a Dream Theater show that this was a possibility. And I was like, what are you talking about? And Raina's like, oh, it was John's idea. And John turned around and he's like, yeah, you know, you guys are going to be opening, you know, when I do the solo tour. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Right. And we were like, really? This isn't going to happen. Seriously?
Probably within a couple of weeks of that, it was like, poof, it's reality.
And that's when we were all like, whoa, we got a lot of work to do. Yeah. And it just was so much, so fast that you just do what you got to do. And it just was happening so fast. And we were just doing step by step that it was just like a cyclone. It was just like, wow, this is just all happening so fast. And we just went with it. We just did it. Yeah. And that was it. We were like, okay, we're doing this. We're going. And we just did what we had to do. And we did it. That was it. We stepped up to the plate and we just did it. I don't think we even realized what we were doing. We just did it.
What gear do I need? What do I need this? What do I need that? Yeah, I need more of this. And like every other day, one of us was like, oh my God, I need this. Oh my God, I need this. And
yeah, I know. I was telling Mike, I'm like, take me to the music store. Mike's like, the music store. I'm like, I don't have time for endorsements and stuff. I need chords now. We're going to the music store. He's like, okay. Whatever you want. Whatever you want, honey. I'm like, we're going now. I need to buy this. I need to get that. I need to get this. He's like, well, I could call. No call. We're going to the store. You're not calling anybody. We don't have time for that. I need it right now. Right now.
Plus, nobody had cords. We all had trouble getting cords at that point.
Yeah, because it was so close to like right after COVID. I do. I remember going to Guitar Center and I'm like, I need the, what were they again?
The supply chain was all screwed up.
Yeah. And I go in there, I'm like, I need a 30 foot cable. And he's like, we don't have any. 25? Nope.
Nope.
20? Nope. 18? Nope.
Yeah, we have
15. I'm like, I can't get 15. I can't have a 15 foot cord. I need to go across the stage. All right. I need a wireless. No wireless. Oh my God.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? I eventually got a wireless at like four shows into the tour.
A little bit more than that, probably.
Was it Florida
where you ended up getting it?
And I was playing with like a 15 foot cord, I think, or an 18 foot cord. I couldn't walk. I could only walk up to the drum set until I was finally able to get a wireless system.
Yeah, I lucked out. The crew wound up getting me some amazing Ernie Ball cords. I had backup, some nice really long ones, but other than that, it was impossible to get anything anywhere.
It was impossible to get stuff. I even saw videos from the first few shows where you could see me walk up to like up to Yael's right bass drum, and that's where I would stop, and then I'd walk back to Yael's right bass drum, and I would stop, and then walk back to my spot. I had just this little section I could go in because that's all I could get. And then finally I got my wireless system. Thank you, Maddie.
Nice. And then you ladies made it happen. How did you feel, you know, after the first couple shows back together after such a time off?
So great.
It was amazing.
It was just the best feeling. I can't even stop smiling now just thinking about it. It was just like not a day passed from 1985, you know, it was just like the greatest thing, just being on stage. Yeah, we were always on the same side of the stage together.
I mean, we were used to back in the day, we used to play every weekend, pretty much. We did shows every weekend, for years. So, you know, once we got up there, then that's it. It's one of those things.
We would just laugh the whole time. I think we laughed. I don't remember laughing so hard ever. Like, we would get off stage and we'd just laugh. We'd get on the tour bus, we would just laugh. And it was just amazing. It was just an amazing experience, one that I'm just so glad that we did. And we have to thank the Petrucci's for that.
Nice.
Because it was just unbelievable. And the fact that we were with them, we were with the guys at the same time, just was something I'll probably never, ever get to do again in my life. Be able to tour with my own husband.
Yeah.
Was pretty much an experience.
Well, what a family vacation there, huh?
It was, well, you know, to tell you the truth, me and Mike were looking at each other going, is this going to be okay? Are we going to like, I mean, I've been on tour with my husband. I can't even.
Everywhere.
I can't even. Yeah. I can't even tell you how many times I've been on tour with my husband, but this was the first time we ever toured together working.
Working. Yeah.
Where it wasn't me just being on vacation while he's working.
Yeah.
So we were concerned, like, is this going to work? Are we going to get on each other's nerves? Are we going to argue? Are we going to get in each other's way? Like, what's going to happen? Did not happen. We had me and him had the best time together. It worked perfectly. We loved every second of it. It just worked. We still don't even know how. We had such.
Well, there was enough separation, even though we were on the same tour bus. We had our own
Yeah, exactly. That's what made it work. We had our own schedules. You know, we had separate dressing rooms, and I wanted to be with my girls. I didn't want to. Nothing. I'm not saying that against my husband, but I wanted to stay with my girls, my band.
I mean, you guys are going into the trenches together up there. So, you know.
Yeah. So I would rebuild those bonds.
Obviously, that time rekindling that relationship with your girls and it got the creative juices flowing enough to now you got Blood Moon EP. You put together enough new material for Blood Moon to come out in a matter of days here, February 2nd, right? When did you decide to start writing new material then? Was it during the tour when everything was kind of clicking again with everyone? Or
Before the tour. Our drummer Yael really wanted to have this EP recorded and released for the tour.
Oh.
And she was pushing with every ounce of her being to get this done before the tour, so that we could release it on the tour. And that was the right thing to do, but we just couldn't. It just came so fast. We just didn't have the time to get it done. But the writing and everything like that happened long before the tour came about. And two of the songs were already written back in the 90s. So we re-recorded everything. Everything was recorded new.
There were demos of the songs.
Yeah, there were demos of the song. So everything was recorded new. There's no old recordings that we just remixed. It was all re-recorded. Just we couldn't get it done in time for the tour. So we decided to do it afterwards. And then we recorded it afterwards. We got it mixed, mastered, set up. And now here it is.
And when was the current single, Giant Speaks? When was that put together? When was that done?
That was originally written back in the 80s.
'89.
And it just never had been released before then, huh?
It was never released. This was non-released music. Yeah, never released on an album. None of the songs were ever released on an album. It was just...
And so now that Blood Moon is, coming out February 2nd, and it's done and ready for release, I guess that means you're going to have to pack up and load up and do another tour to support it then, right?
I sure hope so. Yes, absolutely.
Is that been discussed, or is that part of the plan? Or
that would be the plan. We're looking into it. We're looking around for booking agents and stuff like that. So we'll see where that goes.
Would that be like a headliner, or would you be going out and support again, or could it be another family road trip?
Right now we don't know. We're just going to see where we go with our EP, and now that we have the EP, we'll be shopping it around and we'll see where that takes us.
Nice. Well, we're closing in on the hour here, I'm glad. It was a pleasure talking with both of you, and it's good to hear the story. And looking forward to hopefully another tour, and hopefully coming to the Cleveland area so I can come and
love to have enjoy it
live and in person. But for any the fans out there listening that might be kind of new to the Mean Streak and everything, and they want to support you guys, where would you send them?
You know the links off the top of your head?
The Mean Streak _ official, I believe, is on Instagram. And is it meanstreakofficial.com?
Is that it? Meanstreakofficial.com? I can look it up.
I know we should know that off our head.
We should know everything.
There's too many.
There's a whole list of them.
Yeah, now with social media, now you're coming back into it with this whole social media game, and it's not fun, let me tell you. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Facebook page, we have the Mean Streak Instagram page.
We need the Mean Streak TikTok so you can do some dances and all that stuff together, right? Your daughter can help with choreograph some of those, right?
We could do like a
yeah, my daughter can. Mean Streak. Well, there's Mean Streak. The Mean Streak Facebook page is, wait a minute, it's just Maria sent the whole thing out with all the links on it.
Yeah, the webpage is meanstreakofficial.com. That's the .com. And that has all the links on it, which makes it very easy. And then the Instagram.
Send them all to the meanstreak.com and then they can find all the links right there.
That's the easiest on that one.
Perfect.
Sounds good. Well, ladies, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate, you spending the time with me. And like I said, hopefully you come to the Cleveland area. I look forward to I've been enjoying Giant Speaks and looking forward to hearing the rest of the EP dropping here soon. And it's, I believe, with Step Off Records. Let's put it out.
Off Step.
Off Step?
Yes.
Okay.
With 1 RPM.
Okay. Awesome. I had my dyslexia must have kicked in or something, but all right. Hey, well, thanks again for your time, and it was a pleasure talking with you both.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Running through your head, suspended, I've been Hey, baby, this is Double D, also known as Dream Daddy. And I gotta tell y'all something about our new sponsorship here at today's Boondoggle. And the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well, then you come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, proteins, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's BOONDOG10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount/boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled D-R-E-E-M. And start saving today because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your friends from today's Boondog sent you.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into Today's Boondoggle.